ABC News, World News, This Week. I'm John Grimes, ABC News. Listen.
Every time I seen him, he looked like he was like a whacked out type of dude, you know.
We share a common objective with the United States. Peace. A comprehensive peace.
I've selected the month of April 1992 as the month I will retire.
In all probability, we have purchased our last shuttle.
I'm honest, I'm trying to be honest, and I'm not the only honest man in this world at all.
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's World News.
Hi, I'm here for the recycling class.
Very good. Do you have the check?
The check?
Yes, you see, since recycling is an extremely difficult process to learn, many students drop out before the course is completed. So I must request the class fee in advance.
Oh, right. Here you go.
Excellent. Have a seat. Now, when one tosses out garbage, one simply drops the trash in a single bin like so. But when we recycle, we separate the trash and deposit it into two respective bins thusly. Any questions?
No.
Excellent. Here you go, then.
What's this?
Your diploma. You've just learned how to recycle. Good day.
Well, wait a second. That's easy.
Well, then perhaps you'd like to sign up for the graduate course.
Graduate course?
Advanced recycling. You'll learn how to use three waste bins. Quite challenging, really.
Nah, I want my money back.
Sorry. That kind of recycling we don't do.
Recycling is easy, and you can make a big difference by starting right now. To learn how you can recycle in your area, dial 1-800-CALL-EDF. That's 1-800-CALL-EDF. Recycle. It's the everyday way to save the world. A message from the Ad Council and the Environmental Defense Fund.
The president may have been gearing up for the summit in Moscow. The Israelis may have been mulling over the latest peace plan. But much of the attention this past week was focused on Milwaukee and an apartment occupied by a 31-year-old man.
Every time I seen him, he looked like he was like a whacked out type of dude, you know. I don't know too much about him, but I knew that people was complaining about his apartment smelling. You know, everybody smelled a funny odor, but nobody knew what it was.
That neighbor and others in the building found out soon after police arrived. They'd been called by a man with a pair of handcuffs dangling from his wrists who said he'd escaped just before the apartment's occupant had tried to kill him. Milwaukee Police Chief Philip Ariola said that other visitors to the apartment never left.
The remains recovered in the suspect's apartment included four intact bodies and various body parts of seven other individuals.
Police arrested a man named Jeffrey Dahmer. They said he offered no resistance and cooperated with them, telling how he had killed his victims, dismembered them, and stored their body parts in his apartment. Police began the process of identifying the victims and notifying their relatives, such as this mother.
You always thought about something happened to other people's kids, but you never think about it until he hit your child, you know, your only child, you know?
As the questioning of the suspect continued, reporter Dennis Dean says the list of possible victims grew.
After talking with Dahmer for more than 20 hours, police say they now believe they have at least 17 murders. But whether all occurred in Milwaukee or in Milwaukee and other cities, they won't say. It is known, though, that the investigation of Dahmer has extended into Germany, where police are interested in him because of a string of murders that occurred while Dahmer served in the military in that country.
Dahmer was brought to court and charged by Judge Frank Civello.
Mr. Dahmer, you're charged with four counts of first-degree intentional homicide. If convicted of each of those counts, you face a term of life imprisonment. You're also charged with habitual criminality. That would add an additional 10-year penalty to each count upon conviction. Do you understand that?
I understand, Your Honor.
Dahmer was calm at his court appearance, much the way he behaved while an employee at the local chocolate factory. Randy Scheitel used to work with him.
He's a real quiet guy. He's the type of guy that went on break. He would drink his coffee, eat a donut, stare at the wall.
Dahmer used to live in Akron, Ohio, where he went to high school with Marty Schmidt, who remembers him as the class clown.
People made fun of him because he was so strange, but he seemed to sort of wear that as a badge of honor sometimes.
Schmidt recalls that Dahmer used to drink a lot.
I remember a number of us thought he needed help. But when you're 16, and especially, you know, the adults around us who should have been the ones saying there's a problem here weren't saying that.
Dahmer's problems grew. He was arrested for sexually assaulting a 13-year-old boy in 1988 and was put on probation. a couple of months ago, a woman named Nicole Childress happened to be near Dahmer's apartment building when a young boy ran out, naked and bleeding.
The boy was trying to get away from him. He was like, he couldn't do too much, but he was like, you know, trying to get away from him and stuff, reaching out for me, you know, so I'm trying to help me and Jeff struggling with this boy.
The police were called, but Dahmer apparently convinced them the incident was just a domestic squabble between two homosexuals. The young boy turned out to be the younger brother of the boy Dahmer molested in 1988 and was identified as one of the victims in Dahmer's apartment. The police officers involved have been suspended for not checking Dahmer's background. As the grisly case was unfolding in Milwaukee, Secretary of State James Baker was lining up Arab support for the U.S. Middle East peace plan. Egypt, Jordan, Lebanon, and Saudi Arabia signed on after last week's agreement by Syria. Baker looked for Israel's approval.
This is a moment of historic opportunity. For 43 years, Israel has sought direct negotiations with its neighbors, and it has been right to do so. Direct negotiations are the only way to solve problems and the only way to secure peace.
Israel had refused to attend a conference, but Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir told Baker his government would reconsider its opposition.
We share a common objective with the United States. Peace. A comprehensive peace.
That, as ABC's Barry Dunsmore reminds us, does not mean Israel doesn't have reservations.
Israel's dilemma is that Baker has brought good news and bad news. The good news is that all the key Arab leaders appear to have accepted the concept of direct negotiations with Israel, which for decades has been Israel's most cherished goal. The bad news is that everyone else wants these talks to be based on the formula of land for peace. Israel no longer accepts that formula.
Israel's formula is peace for peace. It also does not want Palestinians from East Jerusalem or Palestinians with any connection to the PLO to attend a peace conference. As Secretary of State Baker hopscotched his way across the Middle East, President Bush got ready for this coming week's summit in Moscow. As he prepared for the meeting, Soviet President Gorbachev built on the favorable reception he got at the recent economic summit in London and applied for full membership in the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, moves which put more pressure on the West to help the Kremlin financially. The USSR also said it plans to sell a 30% interest in the plant that makes most of its passenger cars. Italy's Fiat company seems the most likely buyer. Gorbachev has also proposed a new charter for the Communist Party that would make Marx and Lenin roll over in their graves. ABC's Jim Laurie in Moscow says that move is vintage Gorbachev.
I think he has once again displayed his tactician's ability. For one thing, he has called for a full Congress of the Communist Party for some time in November. That's the body that can really make the decisions to change the party. He has put forward a radical set of platform, a new platform, if you will, which calls on the party to be transformed to what is actually a social democratic party, devoid of the old Marxist ideology.
What's more, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Colin Powell, and his Soviet counterpart have been discussing ways they can get together to help solve regional conflicts, such as the Middle East. General Powell says you might even see the two Cold War enemies conduct joint military exercises.
The relationship is progressing in a way that might lead to some opportunities such as that. I spent most of this week observing Soviet exercises, and they have come over and seen some of our exercises. So the relationship is growing that we may well see that happen at some point in the future.
Highlight of the summit will be the signing of the new treaty to reduce long-range nuclear weapons. And observers say it will come as no surprise if President Bush announces that the Soviet Union will receive most favored nation trading status. No such treatment for China. At least as far as the Senate is concerned, it voted to restrict trade with Beijing, although, as Senate Republican leader Bob Dole said,
there's no doubt about it, this legislation is not going to become law. The vote has clearly indicated that, even though there is a majority voting in the affirmative, there is a bipartisan minority, more than enough by 10 or 11 votes, to sustain a veto.
Which has been promised by the president. Despite the vote, Senator Dole said that he and many others are very concerned about human rights abuses in China. The U.S. remains concerned about the fate of the Iraqi people in the wake of the economic sanctions imposed almost a year ago. The sanctions have stayed in place largely because the Allies do not think Saddam Hussein has come clean on the issue of his nuclear capability. The Bush administration has drawn up a plan to allow Iraq to sell some of its oil, to buy food and medicine, to pay war reparations, and to pay for the destruction of its nuclear and chemical weapons. The UN has been looking at the U.S. proposal, and Britain's ambassador, David Hannay, says
there was a very broad agreement on a number of points. Firstly, that if there are to be any exports of oil from Iraq, there will have to be really watertight controls at all stages.
No decision at the UN on the use of the military to force Iraq to make full disclosure on its nuclear capability. Full disclosure on the fate of three Vietnam veterans missing in action being sought by the families of those men. And the Pentagon says it is doing all it can to help. At issue is a photograph of the three, identified by the families as Colonel John Robertson and Major Albro Lundy, both of the Air Force, and Navy Lieutenant Commander Larry Stevens. The Pentagon can't say for sure if the picture has been doctored or not, but as ABC's Bob Zelnick tells us,
more than 20 reports claiming to contain pictures or other information on Robertson, Stevens, or Lundy were received after a highly publicized visit to Phnom Penh last July by a U.S. team seeking to identify the remains of a missing American. According to the Pentagon, the material included not only photographs, but a letter and audio tape claiming to have come from Robertson, biographical information on all three, and reports of their alleged location.
And as for what was contained in that audio tape and letter, Marine Lieutenant Colonel Kerry Gershanik says
the autobiographical data was consistently wrong. The names were usually spelled correctly, but then when you get into spouses, children, hometowns, other information, type of aircraft they were flying, that information is incorrect.
And as far as Vietnam's representative at the UN is concerned,
there are no live American prisoners of war held in captivity in Vietnam, nor are there any who choose to stay behind voluntarily.
The wife of one of the men, Barbara Robertson, isn't giving up in spite of what the Pentagon says.
It doesn't dash my hopes because I really feel they're trying so hard to prove that this is incorrect, and if they take that same amount of energy to prove that it is correct and get those men home, we'll have them home, and that's the bottom line.
Spokesman Pete Williams says that the Pentagon is as anxious to clear up the matter as the families are.
Nobody in the Department of Defense, which is, after all, an organization peopled largely by people in uniform, many of whom fought side by side with Americans missing in Southeast Asia. They would never stand for any kind of cover-up. And I think all Americans understand that as well, that the U.S. government has nothing to gain from trying to cover up. In fact, quite the opposite.
More fuel has been added to the fire with the release of yet another picture of yet another MIA. This one, supposedly taken by a Laotian official last year, is allegedly of Army Captain Donald Carr. Carr's brother says he's convinced the picture is authentic. Just as murky as the MIA issue is the state of the economy. The most recent figures are clear, but the conclusions are not. For instance, new orders for big ticket items were down sharply last month. And while the total output of the nation's goods and services went up during the second quarter, it rose far less than expected. Barry Bluestone, who is a professor of economics at the University of Massachusetts, says the GNP figure isn't much to write home about.
We're going to begin to see something of a recovery, but it will be so very weak that we'll continue to see high unemployment rates and perhaps rising unemployment rates. We're out of a recession in the sense that we have positive growth, but at 0.4%, that isn't very good news.
An indication that higher unemployment rates might be in the offing came with the most recent data on first-time claims for jobless benefits. They were up by 30,000. Democrats on both sides of Capitol Hill have moved to extend unemployment benefits to people who have been out of work for more than a year. As the chairman of the Senate Budget Committee, Tennessee's James Sasser, puts it,
it's high time that the administration started supporting
aid to our own people who face an emergency situation. And that emergency is citizens of this country who want to work but can't find work.
Between 8 and 10,000 employees of the Digital Equipment Corporation will be looking for work as the result of cutbacks at the nation's number two computer maker. And ABC's Ken Pruitt says another computer company is trimming its staff in the recession's wake.
10,000 of Unisys Corporation's 70,000 employees are going to lose their jobs as the company tries to stop hemorrhaging red ink. 6,000 of the layoffs will come by the end of this year and the rest by mid-1992. Most of them will be in the U.S. Unisys, the nation's third largest computer manufacturer, formed by the merger of Burroughs and Sperry in 1986. It hasn't made a profit since 1988. Unisys also announced a whopping second quarter loss, $1.3 billion. Wall Street was expecting a loss from Unisys, but not nearly that big.
Big is how you describe the losses at the three major U.S. automakers. Reporter Tim Fritz has the figures.
Ford lost $323.5 million in the second quarter. The Red Ink and General Motors totaled $785 million. And it could have been lots worse. Ford lost $567 million selling cars and trucks. GM lost $1.3 billion selling its products. Only non-automotive subsidiaries were profitable.
And Chrysler's loss was a larger than expected $212 million for the April through June period. For the second time in as many weeks, the banking industry has announced a big merger. This time, the NCBC Corporation combines forces with the C&S Sobran Corporation to form the nation's third largest bank. The scandal involving the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, BCCI, continues to grow. BCCI is linked with a 15-year pattern of bribery, phony loans, unrecorded deposits, and other shenanigans. It has reportedly dealt with international terrorists, and the CIA apparently used BCCI to set up accounts for covert operations. Sam Gwynn, an investigator for Time magazine, says it's no wonder BCCI was able to hide its operations for so long.
You had a bank that, because of the existing loopholes in international regulation, simply was not regulated by a single central authority. This bank just absolutely flew under everybody's radar.
Of most concern to the Bush administration right now is how the BCCI scandal will affect the nomination of Robert Gates to be head of the CIA. Gates was the number two man at the agency at the time the CIA is said to have been dealing with BCCI. Questions are also being raised about the way the white minority government of South Africa funneled money to one of the major black groups which opposed the other major black organization. ABC's Richard Sergey has this report.
South Africa's foreign minister says his government has nothing to apologize for after revelations that police secretly funded the Zulu-based Inkatha movement. Pik Botha says the $100,000 was intended to bolster Inkatha's anti-sanctions message, which it has long shared with the white government. At a news conference, Botha strongly denied allegations that funding was used to spark violence between Inkatha and its political rival, the African National Congress. Botha did reveal that at least $30 million in covert money has been spent in the last 5 years to combat international sanctions against South Africa. Richard Sergey, ABC News, Johannesburg.
The other shoe has dropped in Los Angeles.
I've selected the month of April 1992 as the month I will retire.
The announcement from Police Chief Daryl Gates came just a couple of weeks after an independent commission urged him to step aside. Its recommendation was made in the wake of an investigation of the March 3rd beating of a black motorist, Rodney King, by white police officers, an incident the whole country saw after it was videotaped by a bystander. The commission found that the L.A. Police Department, under the leadership of Chief Gates, tolerated racism and brutality. Meantime, the trial of the officers involved in the beating has been delayed repeatedly. And as ABC's Jane Platt reports, there could be more of a wait in store.
Four L.A. police officers accused of beating Rodney King will have their day in court, but not in Los Angeles. A state appeals court has ordered the trial moved out of L.A. because of the avalanche of publicity in the city. Defense attorneys wanted the trial moved. Prosecutors have opposed the change of venue and have not yet decided whether to fight this latest ruling. Barring any further legal challenges, the trial will be held in another city. No decision yet on what that other city may be. Jane Platt, ABC News, Los Angeles.
It's been 2 weeks since the derailment of a Southern Pacific train dumped a weed killer into the Sacramento River. The spill eventually reached Lake Shasta, some 45 miles downstream. The lake is California's largest reservoir and feeds water supplies throughout the state. The cleanup's been underway, and Herbie Bart of Southern Pacific says...
The lake is clean.
You mean it's gone?
I mean it's gone.
Completely?
It's 0.08 part per million is the highest reading that's found, and that's very sparsely found. You want me to go swim in it for you?
Sure.
I'll be happy to.
Unlikely that Bart would want to swim in the river, though. One state wildlife official says that at least 100,000 fish were killed. And Howard Saracen of the Fish and Game Department says it'll be some time before the Sacramento River returns to normal.
We have actually already seen fish in the Sacramento River, you know, at the spill site and below. The problem is that those sites are still fairly devoid of any aquatic life. So there's not any insects or, you know, small organisms for the fish to feed on.
The area of the Sacramento River where the spill occurred is one of the world's premier trout fishing areas. We miss the sound of the space shuttle roaring aloft this past week, as trouble with a critical main engine computer forced a postponement of the 42nd mission. The goal of this one was to put a communication satellite into orbit. The postponement came as Vice President Dan Quayle announced a new national space launch strategy.
The policy does not envision acquiring new orbiters. Therefore, in all probability, we have purchased our last shuttle.
The Vice President says that a new fleet of vehicles will not carry astronauts. First flight of this new generation is scheduled for 1999. The shuttles won't be phased out, though. They'll still be used in missions where manned flights are necessary. And British astronomers say they think they've found a new planet. Not in our solar system, but in one in a galaxy far, far away. The new planet, if it is one, seems to be orbiting the flashing remains of a collapsed star. The new found fortune of Mr. Fong. That story, when World News This Week, continues in a moment.
Hi, I'm Michael Bolton. Instead of carrying a tune, I'm carrying a message about abused children. Child abuse claims the lives of 3 American children every day. Parenting is a tough job. There are the pressures of caring for a child day in and day out, and the frustration of not always knowing what to do. The result? A sense of being isolated, cut off, feeling hopeless, which can drive a parent to strike out at a child. If you know of a parent having difficulty, reach out, sit down and talk. Give that parent a break from a stressful day by offering to take care of the children. And if you're having difficulty, get help for yourself. Talk to a friend. Sign up for a parenting class. For more information, write me, Michael Bolton, Box 2866, Chicago, Illinois, 60690. Take time out. Don't take it out on your child.
This message is sponsored by the National Committee for the Prevention of Child Abuse and the Ad Council.
Alan Fong didn't make much as a restaurant worker in San Francisco, so when he found a bag containing $277,000 under a table, it could have been the ticket to his lifelong dream to own his own business. But, as Mr. Fong says...
I'm honest, I'm trying to be honest, and I'm not the only honest man in this world at all.
So Alan Fong turned in the money. Word got out, and before you know it, there was San Francisco Mayor Art Agnos helping to negotiate a deal that would give the Chinese immigrant a chance to borrow the money to make his dream come true, to buy his own yogurt store. Is honesty the best policy? You bet, says Mayor Agnos. And as far as Alan Fong is concerned...
Mr. Fong is the perfect symbol of the meaning of honor.
And those are the people and stories that made world news this week. World News This Week was written and produced by Gil Longin. Engineering by Gary Jeffries. I'm John Grimes, ABC News, New York. World News This Week is a presentation of ABC News.